Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. I'm almost afraid to ask how you're doing.
I am cranky. It's a miserable day.
It's, you know, I would like to think it's going to get better.
It would be hard for it to get worse at this point. And when I say terrible, and, you know, I mean, we're just first world.
Right. Terrible. It's first world terrible. What it means is our technology is not playing nice today.
Yes. Yes. We're actually having to. Yes. And you know, and the FBI is out of control. But, you know, whatevs.
Yeah. Whatevs. Hey, did I mention at any point today that we have a sponsor on TDO today?
Not yet. You did the first time we recorded the show.
But
not this time.
Yeah, well, guess what? The sponsor is still Yoink from Eternal Storms.
Oh, excellent. Still for me. This may be new information for others.
Yeah. Well, you know, as long as we're here and as long as this seems to be working now, why don't we just dive into a topic that I'm sure is going to make everyone happy. And this is what's happening with Rule 41. And it's a federal set of rules for how criminal investigations can be conducted. And it's basically the cookbook for what you can and can't do at the federal level for criminal investigations. And there's been a change to that set of rules that is scheduled to go into effect at the beginning of December. So we know what the changes are now, but they don't go into effect for a few more months. And these changes relate to the way we get online and the way we surf the internet. Well, actually, the way a lot of people do, without in many cases without even realizing. Okay, but a subset. And so the changes give the judges, federal judges, the ability to issue warrants for search and seizure based on the way you are accessing the internet. Meaning, if you're doing something that obfuscates what activities you are engaging in, or obfuscates where you actually are, then,
for instance,
if you use a VPN, for instance, if you use a Tor web browser, those qualify as tools that hide your activities and hide your presence. So those could absolutely be included in the search and seizure warrants. Then there's another side of this. And the other side is, if you are running a computer that has malware installed, then these judges can issue a search and seizure warrant based on that. So meaning your computer has a piece of malware that got on it, and it's now, without your knowledge, it's pumping out spam emails, or it's being used for denial of service attacks on other servers, things like that. And you wouldn't know, but now all of a sudden, here's this search warrant for your computer, and you're already a victim of getting hacked.
Well, let's clarify here. So ostensibly, this rule change, it was just done by Congress?
No, this comes from the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, to be fair, this is what the courts are supposed to do, right? They're supposed to interpret the law.
Well, this isn't a law interpretation. This is a setting of policy. So but
I think that policy was originally established by, at the very least, the ability to make said policy was established by statute.
And yes, but it's up to the Supreme Court to continually review the policies and then update them as they see fit. So in this case, we have the Department of Justice saying, hey, we need to have these changes to these procedural changes to the way we can conduct investigations. And the Supreme Court looks at it and says, yes, this is acceptable, or yes, we will make these changes to the policy. And then that gets handed back to Congress so that they're aware of the changes. And then there's what I'm calling a cool down period, where there's a gap of time between when the policy is created and when the policy goes into effect. So we have the policy now, it goes into effect in December.
Yay! All right, so ostensibly this is being done so that the FBI can pursue criminal cases where the criminals, cyber criminals in particular, hackers, identity thieves, criminal organizations, all that sort of thing, that where they're using these obfuscation services to hide what they're doing. Right?
Yes.
Okay. But it also sounds like the very act of using one of these services essentially becomes grounds for the search warrant in the first place.
Yes. The policy doesn't state that specifically, but the wording is broad enough that it can encompass that as well. And would you like me to read that to you?
Sure.
Okay. So here's the relevant section from the changes in Rule 41. A magistrate judge with authority in any district where activities related to a crime may have occurred has authority to issue a warrant to use remote access to search electronic storage media and to seize or copy electronically stored information located within or outside that district if A, the district where the media or information is located has been concealed through technological means, or B, in an investigation of a violation of, it's a U.S. Title 18 criminal code number there, the media are protected computers that have been damaged without authorization and are located in five or more districts. So if a computer is using any tool that hides its activities or its location, then that falls within the guidelines here. Also, if your computer has been hacked and there's malware installed, that applies as well. And then it gives federal law enforcement the authority to hack into your computer.
But there was a line in there about pursuant to a criminal case.
Let's see. So there's the first part where it says, in any district where activities related to a crime may have occurred. That's a very, very broad statement right there.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Any district in which a crime, well, that's every district. By definition, right out of the block, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because a crime may have occurred everywhere. All right, go ahead. All right, so that's one. But what's the? Do you happen to have any experience with the practical application of such terms?
No, this is so broad. This is far broader than anything I ever dealt with.
What was the Supreme Court vote?
There is no vote. This is the Supreme Court saying, "This is the policy that we're presenting." This doesn't work like a regular Supreme Court case.
Well, so how many judges signed it?
This comes from the entire justice. But we don't know
if it was all eight members.
No, I do not know that. But since this is handled in a way that's very different from the cases that come before the court, I'm not sure if it has to be all judges or all justices agree, or if it's a completely different thing, because this falls under the administrative procedural responsibilities that the Supreme Court has. Like the Supreme Court says when federal offices are closed, like for holidays. So it's a totally different thing than the regular cases that they hear. It's this very mundane administrative thing.
Right. All right. So again, the real issue here is that the way this is written, it could be interpreted that the mere act of using, say, a Tor browser or a VPN service becomes reason to get a search warrant, becomes justification for a search warrant.
Yes, that's how this looks. But okay, let's assume for a moment, though, that's not the case. It's irrelevant, because if you believe that there is a crime that you need to investigate, a federal crime you need to investigate, and the perpetrators of this crime, your suspects, are using technology to obfuscate who they are and where they are, then how do you know where to target if you're not just doing blanket searches?
That is a good point, too. And then you, I think you mentioned that victims of a malware attack, mm-hmm. you Windows people in particular, victims of a malware attack where their machine has been turned into some kind of a zombie bot.
Yeah.
It could... would therefore also be subject to a search warrant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is supremely dangerous stuff, in my opinion, which is why I was wondering how many people actually signed off on this. It seems like the law and order justices would be all over, but it seems like the civil rights and what's the other word for civil rights?
It depends on who you talk to. The justices that favor protecting civil liberties and privacy.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
Okay.
It seems like those judges would not be keen on this. This is scary stuff. This is scary stuff. Scary stuff. Scary stuff. I don't like it.
I'm going to make it a little worse for you.
Excellent. Oh, I'm so glad, because my day. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to go back to the part where it says, issue a warrant to use remote access to search electronic storage media and to seize or copy electronically stored information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Remote access. That means that federal law enforcement will have the authority to remotely hack into your computer.
Excellent. Well, nothing can go wrong there.
Right.
There can't possibly be any abridgments of our civil liberties with broad scale, free, easily obtained legal authority to hack into our computers.
Right. Okay. Now I'm going to throw salt in that wound that I just cut open for you, because it's that kind of day. The FBI has a history of not always using the most secure hacking tools, which means that the act of the FBI or another federal law enforcement agency hacking into your computer to remotely monitor your activity and copy data in and of itself could potentially expose your computer to hacks from other sources.
Oh, excellent. I'm sitting up back and blowing bubbles because I'm just so thrilled with this.
I can tell.
There's another aspect that you told me about the first time we did the show, and that was how an aspect of this that was designed to make sure that the FBI was actually covered in all districts when it got a warrant,
mm-hmm.
so that you could get a warrant and be assured that that warrant was legal wherever it was pursuing said warrant. That has the side benefit of allowing the FBI to shop courts, particularly looking for a court that's going to rubber stamp their request.
It does. And it also gives the Department of Justice the authority to execute a warrant anywhere in the United States, any territories that the United States hold, or potentially anywhere in the world.
Yeah, they may end up having some.
Of course, from a practical standpoint, try and get other governments to cooperate with the FBI in hacking into their own citizens' computers.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, they could do it, and anyway. But that's kind of a, I don't know. This is scary stuff.
It is, and what I'm hoping is that the outcome will be that Congress will look at this and decide this is a little too broad. This is too encompassing. Therefore, we need legislation that says this is not allowed.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. And that's, so we have this cool down window from when the policies are presented and when they actually go into effect. So it does give us a window of time where Congress can say, yeah, no, this isn't going to fly. And there are people in Congress that are already saying this is not a good plan. So that gives us the hope that something will change before December. But if this stands, this gives the Department of Justice an incredibly wide area where it can conduct all kinds of surveillance.
Well, the nifty thing is that the Obama administration that would have to sign legislation into law if legislation was actually passed by this incredibly dysfunctional Congress. The Obama administration tends to favor broad powers, broad surveillance powers. So the chances of a legislative remedy for what sounds like this Orwellian and horrific change in the lovely named Rule 41, the chances of a legislative fix are slim to none. That's my gut instinct.
Well, that's reassuring and happy. Yeah.
Well, thanks for making my morning wonderful, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. Okay, how about if I try and make your morning wonderful in a different way?
Okay.
I'll tell you about Yoink from Eternal Storms.
Oh, good stuff.
They are, by the way, our sponsor this week. And if you haven't tried out Yoink yet, Brian, let me tell you what it does. So okay. It's this cool little app that you put on your Mac. And it acts like a repository for anything you might need to move or copy. So you can put files, like entire documents, into this thing. The same as if you were going to drag a document from one window to another. But you can put it in this temporary holding place. And then you can take content from applications, like you can copy text, you can copy graphic elements out of a Photoshop document. Pretty much any type of content you can copy, you can drop in there. And that sounds like one of those things like, well, why would I want to do that? Let's say that you have a bunch of windows open, you have a smaller screen, you need to move files from one place to another, and they're just in a bunch of different folders, and so it's going to be this slow and tedious process of getting everything where it needs to go. Just drag everything in here, find the one window where it needs to go, and then just move it over. Or let's say you're working on a document where you have a bunch of elements that need to go into it, but they're all coming from all these different places on your computer. Instead of having to go to each one and then jump back to your document and put the stuff in and make sure you don't miss anything, copy all that stuff into Yoink and just let it sit there until you're ready for it, and then just move it into your document as you need it. So you can use it as a staging area. Okay, so I have a 34-inch display right now, so I can have gobs of windows open, I can see everything, I can move stuff between documents easily, and even with a display this big, I have found Yoink to be useful because it's letting me organize what I'm moving and copying, and I'm actually doing a lot less window hopping than I was before. Mm. So it's actually really cool and really useful, and it's pretty cheap. It's $6.99. That's it. So what you need to do, everyone, including you, Brian, is go check this out. And so what you do is go over to eternalstorms.at/TDO. And you can learn more about the app there. And then it has a link that's just going to hop you right into the Mac App Store where you can buy a copy. $6.99. Totally worth it. And that's cheaper than 2 days at Starbucks. Totally worth it. All right. Yoink, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Brian, before we wrap up, and we're like pretty much out of time, but before we wrap up, you have this awesome tip that I think would be really helpful. I like to think of it as gaming the system to our advantage.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. So basically, I put together a guide for buying discounted iTunes cards. And the guide includes... so here's the deal. You can buy discounted iTunes cards. So let's say you can buy a $100 gift card for $80. Well, that means that when you go to buy something on iTunes or the App Store, be it movies, be it books, be it TV shows, be it songs, or be it an app, you are going to get a 20% discount when you pay for it. And retailers will discount these cards as loss leaders. They want you to either visit their online store or visit their actual store. And in some cases, like a PayPal, anyway, long story short, there are lots of different places that you can buy discounted iTunes cards. Now, they tend to come in and out of sale. Mm-hmm. And there's an iTunes card. There's an iTunes, a Twitter account called, let me get the actual name. It's iTunes Card Deals. It's a Twitter account. Can you stick that note in the show notes there?
Of course.
And then we've got the link in the how to as well. And they tend to always have the current offers that are out there. And I've actually followed them pretty closely. And if you buy stuff from iTunes in the App Store, you're kind of crazy to not do it with discounted cards. Now, if you're going to do it properly, you always want to stay ahead of what you're shopping for. Right? Does that make sense?
So proactively buy your cards.
Yeah, buy them before you need them. And my how-to explains the difference between a digital gift card and a physical gift card, and exactly how that process works. All the ones that I mention, I've actually used at some point or another. So, you know, I personally trust them. So, you know, make of that what you will. Discounts tend to run anywhere in between 10% and 25%. I even have a way of buying an iTunes card at 5% off with Bitcoin in the how to. So yeah, I mean, this is like free money.
That's really cool.
It's the definition of free money. You're buying a gift card at a discount, and Apple is so important, and the iTunes ecosystem is so important. Lots of retailers do this, both, like I said, online and in their stores. If you haven't already tapped into this, you need to do so.
I love it. And what a much happier note to wrap up the show on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we are out of time. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here and for being such a trooper as our technology failed us over and over today.
Word.
Word. Yoink from Eternal Storms, thank you for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, eternalstorms.at/TDO. Pick up a copy of Yoink. It's $6.99, and you're going to get far more value out of it than that $7 price tag. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.